welcome aboard the Battleship Pretension. I'm Tyler Smith.
I'm David Bax.
And thank you for listening. David.
Yes.
How you doing?
Well, I'm feeling a little penitent, maybe.
Oh, okay.
I wanted to save this for this episode. So last week on the podcast, I went off on a little rant, maybe, about how I was not a fan of school when I was in school, when I was a kid.
Sure.
I didn't like school. And I felt that I thought that I was being pretty clear about what I meant, but a listener of ours who was a school teacher sort of reached out and was like, hey, this is, you know, school teachers do a lot for very little money, and this is a particularly difficult time for school teachers in parts of the country where they're being sort of forced to go and spend all day with teenagers inside, you know, maybe a little bit of a tone deaf time to talk shit about how much you hated school. But so I want to apologize to school teachers and make it clear that you are not the reason I didn't like school. It was about me. I didn't like school for the same reason I didn't like being a kid. I just wanted to be an adult and not be told what to do. That's all it was. And I'm sorry if I gave the impression that I didn't respect what school teachers do, because I actually do. They do things that I would never do, Tyler, you included, do things that I would find way too difficult and trying. And they do it to help children who are the worst. That's a joke. So anyway, I just wanted to address that.
Now, yeah, I had a good relationship with most of my teachers, even in classes that I didn't like. I remember I was in a science class, and science is just not my subject, but the instructor I got along splendidly with, so much so that at the end of the semester, he like wrote a very encouraging note of me talking about how I was going to make it in life, despite getting he didn't say this, but despite my getting consistent C's and D's in his class, like he was able to see past that, honestly, and see like who I was and say nice things about me, which was very, very cool of him. Obviously, like, there were some teachers I didn't like, but that could also have been the subject that they were teaching. I think for me, it was just that, like, I don't like having to be places, especially when granted, I've had jobs that require me to be somewhere, but you can quit that if you need to, if it's overwhelming, but you can't quit school, at least not up until a certain age. And I think for me, like, waking up early when I really didn't want to, and then like going to a place that I probably would not have wanted to be, although maybe if school had started at 11, maybe I would have loved it. I don't know. So for me, it was more just, people telling me where to be and when, and not having a choice in the matter. So I guess it is that thing of like, no, I want to be an adult where I choose what I do and where I go. So anyway.
All right. Well, before we get started, Tyler, and we introduce our guest, I want to tell you about tweakedaudio.com. Tweakedaudio.com is where you go for professional quality earbuds in a variety of stylish styles and colorful colors. They look great. They sound great. Tyler and I use them each and every day of our lives. Today I was listening, and I'll get in a minute, I'll get our guest's point of view, because I know I haven't talked about this with our guest in a long time, but I know he is, or at least used to be, a bit of a metalhead. And I'm not sure if that's still the case, but still kind of the case for me. Today I was listening on my tweakedaudio.com earbuds to a new EP by a band called Nader Sadek, I think is what they're called. I'm not entirely sure how you pronounce that, but they're a death metal band from these United States of America, and they have a new EP out that also I don't know how to pronounce, the Serapium. This is the thing about listening to metal, is that you're guessing at a lot of these pronunciations a lot of the time. I don't know how to say Anelnathrak. I don't know. Is that how you pronounce that? Who knows? But I could do this all day. But sounded great on my tweakedaudio.com earbuds. They're available at a low, low price at tweakedaudio.com. But if you use the offer code pretension at checkout, you get 1/3 off that low, low price and no shipping charges. So please go to tweakedaudio.com and use the offer code pretension.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Tyler?
Yes.
Our guest is a long time friend of Battleship Retention. And this is, I believe this is the first time we've had him on since the pandemic started, which has been, means it's been too long, but, I want you to help me welcome back to the show, our good friend and possible metalhead, Josh Fadem.
Hi, can you hear me all right with this technology that I'm using?
Yes.
I think so.
I'm getting picked up all right.
Yeah. So what are you listening to these days?
I am only listening to film noir.
Oh, that's interesting, because visually I'd say that's its primary strength. But if you just want to listen to it while you're, you know, doing other things, that's fine. Cooking, whatever.
Right. Sometimes it's a film noir audio commentary, but I've also thought, well, I can get more film noir in if I save the audio commentaries to 2021. I'm just trying to cram in as much film noir during the pandemic as possible. I do. It's funny because I do remember, it's really been a long time since I've been down a deep dive of heavy metal or any kind of metal, really. I was pretty in it for a while, but I think that was when, like, probably around somewhere from like 2006 to 2010, when you could get, like, you know, they had those sites where you could download RAR files.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I would just go find, and I think I was texting about this the other day, but it's like, I would listen to like so much Morricone. I would just, like, there would also be sites, you'd get old soundtracks, rare outer print soundtracks. And I would get tons of, there was one particular site, I can't remember what it's called, but it had so much hard to find metal on it that was just from all over the world. And it was like, wow. I tried to stay on top of it, but I can't remember the last time I was like really talk.
Well, I think it's something I was associated with you because, as we've mentioned on the show before, we met you through Zaljanon, who was a metalhead. And so Zaljanon and I would talk metal a little bit. And so
he's a professional metalhead now.
Is that right?
Well, he moved to Finland and started a metal label.
Oh, wow.
Well, yeah, then he is a professional metalhead.
Yeah, in that sense.
You know, occasionally I think about like what happened to like some of our early guests, and I was like, whatever happened to Zaljanon? And while I wouldn't have necessarily guessed that, I'm also not surprised by it. You could say almost anything about him.
Right.
And it'd be like, no, that sounds right.
You know what I'll say about him, and I hope he won't get mad at me if he listens to it, fine. If he gets mad at me, fine. I'll say his name's really Josh.
Hey,
how about that Zaljanon, Josh? Oh, if you're out there and you're listening, what are you gonna do? You're gonna come and get me all the way from Finland?
We might have to remove this episode from the archives.
Sorry, Josh.
Josh Fadem, not Josh Zaljanon, Josh Fadem, you mentioned noir. That's what we're having you on today to talk about, because you and I were texting the other day and you mentioned you've been watching a lot of noir movies recently.
Right.
It is Noirvember, and I myself have not been able to watch a lot of noir in November. Noirvember just falls at a bad time of year for me, where I tend to be watching a lot of end of the year type of
affair.
I figured out this is a great opportunity for us to do a Noirvember episode with someone who's actually watched a lot of noir recently.
Right.
So I think this is just going to be sort of a loose conversation about what noir films has Josh Fadem been watching recently.
Well, I'm curious what I'm assuming, you know, like when at this point in the, since BP's been around so long, you guys probably have a lot of topics that you're like, well, we'll just do another episode on that topic. How many noir episodes have you guys done, you think?
Not many, actually. I think we may have only done one. And even then, I'm not 100% sure if we did.
Yeah, I'm not sure that people think, like, I think people ask these kind of questions, but I think sometimes there are topics that are so iconic that it feels like, I don't know how to approach it.
Where, like, do you start?
Yeah. Like, we've never really done it. I think we've talked about doing an episode on Westerns, but Westerns is such a big idea.
Right.
I don't know how
it would be. It would be like a 3-part series. Classical Westerns, revisionist Westerns, and then probably spaghetti Westerns. And there are movies and topics that are just so big that for me, the way that I've a little peek behind the curtain as far as my way of thinking. As long as we've not done a Western episode, then we're never out of topics.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's always there in our back. Yeah. I mean, we've been doing this for 13 years. We still haven't run out of topics, but the day will come when we run out of topics. Thank God we've got our three-part Western series. Maybe by then we'll think of something else or something will happen in Hollywood.
Yeah. Well, no, and that means that whenever we finally do our final episode in the year 2064 or whatever.
Sure.
It has to be about Westerns. We have to save that until our final episode.
Oh, but you know what? One of us will die right after the top of the show topic. And so we will never get to it.
Maybe a safe way to approach it might be like, okay, we're not going to do the Western. We're just going to do like Westerns. We're going to talk about essential Westerns we've seen.
Right. Yeah.
Well, and it's Westerns are very similar to noir in regards to there's just so damn many of them, you know, like you can't even really scratch the surface. I mean, I feel like I'm a fan of Westerns, just like I'm a fan of noir. But when someone's like, oh, did you ever see this? It's like, oh, no. And then they like a real noir fan or like a real Western like aficionado will ask, have I seen this or that or that? And the answer is almost consistently no. There's just so much. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what's exciting about it, because, you know, obviously they're not all going to be great, but there are going to be some gems in there that you don't know about.
Right. I mean, that's sort of how I've found my way into it, is that like, I don't know. It's like anything. It's like, I think you guys maybe are the same way, where I sometimes will go down a serious rabbit hole where it's like, now I'm really into metal, any kind of metal. Now I'm going to get into 70s metal. I'm going to get into Swedish metal. Okay. Now I'm really into Bob Dylan. I'm going to listen to all Bob Dylan, even the Bob Dylan that people don't like. I love it. All Bob Dylan. Okay. Now I'm going to listen to or whatever, you know? And, somehow I found myself in that situation with film noir. And, but I, you know, like, I think I also need like because I'll tell you, it's lonely in the pandemic. Sometimes it's like an obsessive type person who's mm-hmm. obsessed with some sort of media. Like, you know, my girlfriend, we watch a lot of movies together, but she can only handle so much film noir. You know, she's got to watch, we got to mix it up. So I'm kind of like texting any movie friends, like, you watch film noir? You like film noir? You know? And I'm like, I don't have anyone to talk about it with, or if you find someone who's like, yeah, I like film noir, I like a little film noir. You know, if you've already gone this far down the rabbit hole, as I have, you can't like overwhelm them with, be like, well, which ones did you like? Did you like Fallen Angel? Did you like a Hollywood Story or Sunset Boulevard? I mean, obviously Sunset Boulevard is a classic, but Hollywood Story, which was a funny effort. It's fun. Well, it's kind of a spoof. Did you see The Grape from Marion? It's available on, streaming, and you get a bad copy of it, you know, for free. Public, it's a public domain, but you know, you don't want to find like something that's too, you want to get a good copy of it. Hey, do you know that Don McGuire, the actor, he's a character actor in Armors Colorado, also wrote Dial 1119? Speaking of Dial 1119, there's also all these other movies and numbers. There's 99 River Seat. There's just Southside 1000. You know, and it's like, and people be like, oh, I haven't seen those. I've seen the.
Well, that's funny.
Double Indemnity.
Because you've been kind of, you were kind of doing that on Twitter, like tweeting about somewhat obscure noir films as if they were just part of the lexicon.
Yeah.
But I responded in earnest to you, because you were tweeting about Nobody Lives Forever. With John Garfield, and I actually did see that way back in 2007. So every year the American Cinematheque does Noir City, does a month of noir films at the Egyptian.
Yeah.
And then in 2007 they also, in addition, as an addendum to the Noir City at the Egyptian, they did a weekend of what they called Beach Noir at The Arrow out in Santa Monica. And so I went to a double feature of Nobody Lives Forever and mentioning, as you were speaking of movies with numbers in the title, I think it's called 711 Ocean Drive.
With Edmund O'Brien. I haven't watched it yet.
It's kind of a cornier one, but it, I think it ends with a big shootout at like the Hoover Dam or something. So it obviously leaves the ocean, but, so I knew you'd been watching some
deep cuts.
Noir films.
The way I like to approach it is like, I say, you know, who I say, "Oh, you like film noir?" And then they say, "Yeah, I like film noir." And then I say, "Oh, I've been really getting into film noir. If you got any recommendations, you know, well-known, essential, or obscure, let me know." You know, I mean, at this point, I kind of have seen most of the essential ones, but I think in any time I've learned as I've matured, anytime you want to talk to someone about something that you probably know more about than they do, like movies or whatever, it's like, in order to not scare them off, I always feel like I have to be like, I don't care if you don't, I just like talking about movies, you know? Yeah. Do you guys ever feel that way?
Oh yes. When I'm talking to somebody who knows less about movies, but they enjoy movies, they just don't necessarily like it to the degree that I do or obsess about it. I wind up just asking them a lot of questions. Right. And then and hearing their insights, and sometimes it can be very edifying in its own way, and we can find some common ground and that sort of thing. But it can also it's always so easy to come across as like not even necessarily a snob but a know-it-all, so I actively try not to to do that.
Josh, when you asked me for any recommendations, I think everything that I considered like a sort of below the radar film noir, you were like, I saw that. So
I know I've already like gone that deep, but that's what I mean. That's the thing. I think that's the way to approach it. Is if you're enthusiastic, is like, I would talk about that movie. What'd you think of it? Tell me more. You know?
Yeah.
I think
what I should have done is because I was naming the below the radar films noir that I like, I could have started naming ones that I don't think are very good.
That works too.
I don't know if you've seen Slightly Scarlet.
That's
great.
Fritz Lang. And
Street.
Oh, Scarlet Street. But there's also, is Dan Duryea in both of them?
Is he in Slightly Scarlet? It's been a
long time.
Slightly Scarlet is the rare color film noir.
Mm. Oh yeah. I'll tell you my what I've been sort of to keep it focused. I've made a kind of an informal set of rules for myself where I'm sticking to. Yeah, that was how a good way to start. Me for my Noirvember and noir pandemic. I'm sticking with, is it too echoey? I'm in an echoey room. I am sticking with, maybe I'll press these buttons, make a difference. I'm sticking with, as they call in the essays, first, and the historians say, first cycle noir, which is like 1939 to like 1959. And I keep them black and white, except for like a few exceptions, like Leave Her to Heaven. Mm-hmm. And I also own this one Blu-ray I haven't watched yet called A Woman's Devotion. And I always show it to my girlfriend. I go, you need to watch this, honey. but we haven't watched that one yet.
I feel like by and large, handing any film noir to your girlfriend saying, this is how you should behave towards me, is not a great call. You're probably going to wind up dead or in prison.
Oh, shoot. Yeah. Right. In a true noir.
Yeah.
What if your girlfriend is Gloria Graham?
Well, that's pretty impressive on a number of levels.
Right. Yeah. You could be Nicholas Ray's son. Have you heard that piece of scandalous information? Some trivia. Gloria Graham, who's the female lead in a bunch of movies.
Yeah.
She married Nicholas Ray, and then she had an affair with his son, and then later married his son.
Oof.
That story because it comes up in the movie Film Stars Don't Die in Liverpool.
Which, I watched that.
Annette Bening played Gloria Graham. Not a great movie, but a great performance.
Right. Yes, that's what I thought. Great performance. We watched Film Stars Don't Die in Liverpool. I hope the audience knows that was a character that I was doing who goes, you need to watch this, honey. Obviously, right. Yes. Obviously, just wasn't sure. Wasn't sure how I want to keep track of how audiences evolve these days, you know?
Yeah. Sure, sure.
So you just got
to
keep
I want to get you to do a voice because you texted about it. So you wouldn't consider, because you're only doing first cycle, you wouldn't consider something like The Deep End from 2001 as part of this.
I wouldn't bother with that right now.
But
go on.
Yeah, I want you to do your impression of the trailer of The Deep End.
Tilda Swinton's performance is a thing of beauty.
says Vincent Canby of the New York Times.
Oh, yeah. Vincent Canby of the New York Times says Tilda Swinton's performance is a thing of beauty.
That's the part I wanted for some
that
reason.
Was we were talking about this movie, The Reckless Moment by Max Ophuls. And David said, have you seen the remake, The Deep End? And I said, I never saw the remake, but I remember when the trailer came out that the trailer was always like, Tilda Swinton's performance is a thing of beauty. Vincent Canby raves. It's and I'd never actually, to my own ignorance, I'd never heard the term thing of beauty. I didn't know that was like, so it just sounded dumb to me at the time. I was like, a thing of beauty.
Almost like he couldn't think of the term.
Yeah. It's like a thing. Yeah.
It's like, hey, when you're at the grocery store, remember to pick up a thing of hot dogs.
Yeah. Like he wrote it in as a placeholder and then forgot to say the actual word.
It's a thing of beauty.
Oh boy.
And then I think I would always joke about it to my friend until my friend finally said, that's a thing of beauty. They refer to a thing of beauty. Oh, in that sense, I better check out Tilda Swinton's performance. But does Tilda Swinton's thing of beauty performance, is it any match for Joan Bennett's thing of beauty performance in The Reckless Moment?
They're both really great movies.
They're both things of beauty.
Yeah. And The Deep End updates things by, instead of it being, because in The Reckless Moment's about Joan Bennett's daughter, right?
Yeah.
In The Deep End, it's Tilda Swinton's gay son is the...
Oh, interesting
that's
twist.
That's the update to it. Yeah.
Right. She's trying to cover her up for his homosexuality.
Yeah. So both great movies. I saw I saw The Reckless Moment at the Gene Siskel Film Center in Chicago when we first lived there, and I when Tyler and I lived together in Chicago, I should say. And I don't know what The Reckless Moment's availability is now in terms of DVD or Blu-ray.
It
was like impossible to find back then, so it was a big deal that the Siskel Center was showing it.
Right. It's still, I guess, apparently hard to find, but you could get it on an Indicator Blu-ray, and it's a real, it's got the works on it. That label, they're a foreign one. If you got a region free player, they really put on a big DVD Blu-ray production. But to finish the criteria, I keep it American too.
Damn right.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Keep my film noir American. I'm not watching Brighton Rock yet.
Well, have you seen, this wouldn't count then, but speaking of things I saw in a theater at Film Noir a few years ago, they showed the Argentinian film El Vampiro Negro, The Black Vampire, which is an Argentinian remake of M.
Oh.
And it's real good.
I've seen the Joseph Losey M.
1951.
Yeah, which I watched it a long time ago, but I haven't seen it recently. But yeah, that's good. Yeah, I noticed there's on the AFI is having like a Noir City streaming film festival, you know, right now. And I looked at what's playing but it was mostly foreign noir. And I said, I'm too busy working on the American stuff right now. Sorry to my main man, Eddie Muller. You guys watch TCM ever?
Yeah, for sure. I know who Eddie Muller is.
Yeah, every week I wait for Eddie Muller to pop up in noir cosplay and, you know, high five the TV at his yucks.
What's the movie? It's a famous movie. It's not in my tongue. Richard Widmark is the like boxing promoter in London.
Night in the City.
Night in the City. Does that count? It's an American, but he's in London.
I would count Night in the City.
Okay.
Because it's Richard Widmark and Jules Dassin is actually an American, even though you could say it like Jules Dassin because he's made some like foreign ones and think that he's French. But I would count Night in the City. I mean, you know, I have been every time there's like a sale, a 50 off sale or on the Criterion website, I've been like buying up the Blu-rays. Mm-hmm. And I'm out of noir, except for the ones I've like already seen. It's like, well, Detour or The Naked City, they're on the Criterion Channel, so I'm not going to buy those. But, you know, yeah. So I'm running out of noir. I'm out of Criterion noir. But I did, you know, it was too good of a deal to resist. I got Rififi from Barnes & Noble on the clearance sale.
So Josh, a film that I watched, several months ago, actually, at the beginning of the pandemic. And our friend Wes Anthony had given me like a lot of DVDs that he didn't want anymore. And I have been trying to work my way through them. And so I threw in what looked like a fun Richard Widmark noir called Panic in the Streets. Uh-huh. And I did not know when I threw it in that it was about a possible pandemic. And so I was just like, oh, well, this is oddly timely. And I really liked that movie. I think it was like Jack Palance's first film.
Yeah, I watched that one too. And then I doubled it up with, I guess it came out the same year, one called The Killer That Stalked New York. Mm. And that's got Evelyn Keyes, and she's, Panic in the Streets is pneumonic plague. Killer That Stalked New York is smallpox.
Yeah. And,
yeah, I thought Panic in the Streets obviously is the better one, directed by Elia Kazan. And Jack Palance is, he's a real physical force. He's scary.
Yeah, and his, like, his face is like angular, like it looks like it could cut glass. And I think one of the things I really liked about that movie that you just like, imagine trying to get something done in a film noir setting. You're not going to get anything done. Like, right. No one's going to give you any information. Everyone just assumes that you are, that you're not going to like what they have to say. And so the idea that like trying to track like this possible, epidemic or whatever.
Right. This spreader.
And of course no one's going to say, oh yeah, no, he was in my place earlier. They'll be like, I don't know. I never heard of him.
I'm not talking to the cops or whatever. Yeah.
And it could, like, if you twist it a little bit, it's almost a comedy. Like the idea of just trying to do just your regular job that has nothing to do with film noir in the midst of this society, this environment, and then being like, no one's saying anything, and those that do are saying it in like this weird code where everything is really cool and they're blowing smoke in my face.
Right. You know, it's like, it was weird watching those two pandemic noir movies, and I wonder if there's any other ones that exist, but they both came out in 1950. And you know, I think, well, part of the reason I think I've really become obsessed with noir is like, it almost exists in its own world. Like you could treat binge watching film noir like you're watching a TV show. Like you get your same actors that pop up, you start to learn like new names. Like there's, you know, Ella Raines. Oh, Ella Raines, she's in that one. There's Neville Brand. He's in that one. There's Jay Adler again. You know, there's, you know, whatever. Oh, but Jack Palance was in two or three of them, you know? But like, it was weird watching. So it's kind of like its own like escape, you know, in a way that like, even though they're mostly bleak, they kind of make you feel a little good, or they make me feel a little good. Cause they just, it almost like some of them are more gritty and like real, you know, or try to be like Naked City or Asphalt Jungle, but ones, other ones are just like purposefully stylized. But what was funny about those pandemic noir is that they treat certain instances how they think that it would play out, you know, in the country versus maybe in 2020, how some of that stuff actually played out. Like there's a scene in, I think, Killer That Stalked New York, where the mayor is talking to these three like vaccine companies. And he's like, how many vaccines could you get me right now? And the guy's like, maybe 20,000 at the most, 30,000. And then the next guy, how about you? 30,000. And then he's like, but sir, what about all the needles? And then he goes, get me that sewing factory on the phone. they're a sewing factory. They got needles. We need needles. And it's like, we better shape. And then he goes, we better shape up or people are going to die. You know? And it's like, no one would be leveraged. They're not leveraging it like that today. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I watched, this is not noir, but, during the TCM like at home edition or whatever, they aired Jezebel, which I'd never seen before. It's a great movie, but I didn't realize it takes place during an actual historical yellow fever outbreak in New Orleans. So it's the same, like it felt, you know, 6 weeks or 5 weeks into the pandemic as we were at the time, to hear like we had to cancel all the parties and close all the theaters, and people were walking around with like cloth masks over their face in the movie. It was really, really surreal to see. But back to noir. And I want to, cause Josh, I want to ask you what you've been watching recently, but you you did maybe the most recent noir I've actually watched. It was probably pre-November. But speaking of movies with numbers in the title, and speaking of Evelyn Keyes, I watched 99 River Street. Have you seen?
Yeah, that's great.
It's great, and she is so great in the movie. But I really like that one. It's it's fun, but it's also like particularly like brutal, like in terms of like the actual physical violence, because the main guy's I forget the actor, but he's a boxer, and
John Payne.
Yeah, and he lives up to his name. He doles out some pain, but also the whole premise is right. Like that his wife gets killed by the guy she's cheating on him with, and her death is so like almost like
casual. It's dark.
It's like it's super upsetting. How she
And the bad guy Brad Dexter, he's like one of the bad guys or whatever. It's funny. I actually did listen to the audio commentary on that, and Eddie Mueller did the audio commentary, and it's funny because I thought his boxing and his kind of bad boxing was effective. You know, I thought that he was like, I was like, it's kind of stupid the way he boxes. But Eddie Mueller's like, my dad was a sports writer. This is way off. This is terrible boxing. Everything in this movie is great, but this is terrible. And then he also makes fun of Brad Dexter for looking. I like Eddie Mueller. I think he's like kind of like a wise ass, you know? And I guess he was friends with Evelyn Keyes. He keeps name dropping out my friend Evelyn Keyes. But 99 River Street is directed by Phil Carlson. And he made like a few noir that are particularly tough. One that I was like super on board with was it's pretty easy to find because it's public domain, but I guess you gotta, if you watch it, make sure you watch like a good quality what do you call it, you know,
transfer
when they fix it, scan, remaster, fix it. The cleanup, you know, when the UCLA does a good job cleaning it up.
They should just call it Fix-Its, like
the Fix-Its.
Criterion should say on the back of it.
We did
a 4K Fix-It,
yeah.
Using the original camera negative.
Anyway, Kansas City Confidential. It's great. Directed by Phil Carlson. John Payne. You seen that one?
Because someone, I want to say Kino, maybe put it out 5 or 6 years ago. I can't remember. There's a Blu-ray that I have seen of Kansas City Confidential, and it actually came up somewhat recently on the podcast. Time we were talking about movies with states and the names of them,
but and it doesn't feature much Kansas City, or if it's
it takes place almost entirely not in Kansas City, but not even in the U.S.
in like Mexico or something like that.
It's a like a resort in Mexico.
But the
characters are speaking very freely. Like there's no secrets in it. Like it's the total misnomer title.
Nothing is confidential here. The thing that like I've been kind of doing is observing like different, you know, all the, and I'm coming at this as a person who like had a very like basic knowledge of film noir. Like I thought I knew more, and I'm like, I guess I really hadn't seen like the obvious ones, Double Indemnity, Sunset Boulevard, you know, the Billy Wilder ones, you know, the main Bogart ones, To Have and Have Not, Big Sleep, all that. But, and then some other like, you know, maybe lesser known ones like Bodyguard, which Robert Altman wrote, you know? There's like all these different subsects of them, I feel like, you know? And I like ones that are like totally schlocky and crappy. And then there's also like more polished studio ones, you know? And some of them have like really, it's also interesting to see when they get into the mid-50s and, or late, early 50s, and you start getting more like method actors showing up, you know? And they start kind of doing more beboppy movie fidgety acting, which like goes strangely against, you know, this kind of thing where whatever, however you call pre actor studio acting. But there's one that I watched early on, and I don't even know if anyone would categorize this film noir. I don't know why I stumbled upon it, but it's called Gangster Story. And it's the only movie written and directed by our good friend Walter Matthau. He stars in it. And I read on IMDb, who knows if it's true, that he just did it for like nothing to pay off gambling fees. And like, he always said like, oh, it was a piece of crap, but it's like if, you know, there was an Ed Wood movie and Walter Matthau just happened to be the star and happened to be great in it as always. It's like, imagine Walter Matthau stuck in a total piece of crap, you know, like where everyone is like, hey, you. And he's like, hey, I got to go in there and not rob a bank or whatever. I don't know if you follow me.
That last part I was a little iffy about.
Well, there's like a scene in there where he's like robbing a bank.
Okay.
And he gets these cops to show up. And then he says, hey, I'm shooting a movie here. And there's going to be a manager coming in. He's in the movie. But listen, you got to convince him it's a movie because he likes to stay in character. And the cops are like, okay, sounds good. And then the guy shows up and he's like, I got a phone call. I'm supposed to be here at the bank. Yes, go right in there. And then Walter Matthau robs him. And it's just so stupid.
Yeah. You know?
But Matthau is hilarious in it. And he's probably not even trying to be funny. He's just, yeah. Feel free to chime in anytime.
Well, I do. I did actually have a question. But there's more of a broad question in regards to just like anytime you're watching like a genre film of any kind, you know, I mean, like I know people who are huge horror fans and they specifically like really love slasher movies. And so really it would appear that I don't mean to be insulting, but like they're not super discerning, really just like any slasher movie of the 80s, they just kind of liked because it did all the things that they needed, that they wanted it to do. And even if the acting wasn't that great or the story wasn't that great, it's like, well, it's doing the basics of what I needed to do. And, you know, David, you mentioned a noir that you don't particularly like. And then, you know, Josh, you're talking about this film that you think is pretty bad. And so I'm curious to know, like in a larger sense, like what would we consider a bad film noir? Like, is it a film that would it be a film that does the, you know, does the tenets of noir poorly, or is it's doing all that right, but it just is not hooking you in a larger sense.
Right. Or a film that like that, you know, half has like half and half, like it mm-hmm. doesn't have the tenets of noir, but it just kind of feels noir. Or
yeah,
I in all my reading about it, you know, and like the big thing that always comes with film noir, if you're reading about noir, is, oh, the definition of noir is hotly debated. What is a film noir? Is it a genre, a style of movement? And I don't know, I guess. And then it seems to be that the consensus is, well, it can be whatever you want. But like I said, for me, I'm sticking with America and I'm sticking with black and white, except for Leave Her to Heaven and A Woman's Devotion, which I haven't watched yet. And I'm keeping them between 1939 or 1940 to like 1959. But there's some that are in like 1962 that like some define it. Or if you look on the IMDb, the keyword says film noir, or Criterion says, check out these, you know, film noir, this film noir slate we've got out for this month. And there's one there's like Underworld USA from Sam Fuller, you know, and that's like 1960 or so, you know, I guess there's a little, they always say the last true film noir is Touch of Evil by Orson Welles. And then, but then some other people say the last true film noir is Odds Against Tomorrow by Robert Wise. Also, like, I think Touch of Evil's 58, Odds Against Tomorrow's 59. And they both kind of, like hit all the marks, but they just, well, what's interesting to me is that like, I think when you get to the 50s that there starts to be, I observe there's like an awareness of like, hey, this is a genre now and we're doing it this way. We're hitting the tropes. And I'm sure you've all seen like Stanley Kubrick's The Killing.
Yeah.
And like, that's one that I always saw it when I was younger, and I rewatched it recently. And something I realized when watching all these other ones is that all the actors in that movie, pretty much every cast member, is meaningful to film noir. You know, like they all, it's something I never realized, that this, if you could almost look at The Killing as like a film noir, like whatever Heat was trying to be, or Copland was trying to be. It's like, we're going to get every one of the crime film genre and we're going to pad this cast out with, you know, and they've got like Sterling Hayden, Marie Windsor, Colleen Gray, you know, Jay Adler, Vince Edwards,
Elisha Cook.
And Elisha Cook is like so meaningful to film noir. He's in like, he's in like everyone he's in is like important. And, and crap, you know, And so it's interesting, like, having that kind of context. Really, I'm most into the actors. Like, I'm just seeing all the actors and I'm just like, wow, I thought I knew actors and I thought I knew movies and I claim to know it, or at least, you know, bullshitted my way pretty well. But there's a lot of actors that I'm like huge fans of now that I didn't know about, you know, and you watch them over and over and over. And it's like, you're going down this rabbit hole of all these actors that, like, there's so many movies to watch and they're always great. And there'll be a movie like that, for me, is part of it. It's like, there's a movie that'll be a total piece of shit, but Neville Brand showed up, so it can't be all that bad. It's like that Roger Ebert thing about Emmett Walsh, you know, where he's like the Emmett Walsh rule. It's like, well, can a movie with Jay Adler, I mean, Jay Adler showed up and had a scene, it can't be all that bad, you know, or Jay Adler shows up in this movie. Like, there's this movie called, here's an example. There's a movie called Vice Squad, not the Wings Hauser 80s movie. It stars Edward G. Robinson. I watched it. I mostly enjoyed it, but I don't remember anything about it. But there's this guy named Jay Adler who always kind of plays kind of, you know, he's kind of a Jewishy, not really nebbish, just kind of like a sneaky guy, or sometimes he's a boss, or sometimes he's like, you know, a bookie or something like that, or, you know, and he's so weird and wacky in it, and he just kind of, and Edward G. Robinson is just right on screen with him, like, it's like a comedy scene with a straight man. But Jay Adler steals the show, and I looked him up. Turns out he's like Stella Adler's brother.
Oh,
you know, and he's like a guy in his 50s, but like in 1940, and he's doing all this very naturalistic, stylish acting. And it's like, oh, that's interesting to think about. You know, this important acting teacher had this brother, and they probably, and they have another brother named Luther Adler. I put a lot of stuff out there. Go on. You stop me.
Speaking of, well, two things. First, I want to say, because we talked about this before we hit record, I forgot we didn't actually mention that Noirvember was started by our friend of the show, Mariah E. Gates.
Oh, yeah.
It's in its, like, 10th year now, the hashtag. So I wanted to make sure to give Mariah
I was going to say at the beginning, the show, because you should give her credit.
Yeah. I meant to do that. I forgot, because we talked about it off mic. I forgot that we hadn't actually said it on mic. So thank you, Mariah, for inventing Noirvember. Second,
she's very generous of her to do so much Noirvember retweeting on Twitter as well, because it's like, I'm finding all these noir clips of things I've never seen. And I also get a thrill when that someone is indulging my, you know, Twitter joke that I'm kind of doing out to the empty canyon of my followers, being like, can you believe Don DeFore and Don McGuire look kind of similar? And they're both similar style character actors. Can you believe it, guys?
Well, I like this episode.
Anyway,
is turning, I just wanted to get, I wanted to thank Mariah and get that, make sure we got that down on.
Give her a big plug.
Yeah, at Old Film Slicker. Everyone, if you listen to this, you know who Mariah is. I'm sure she's been on the show 3-4 times. But I wanted to, I like that this episode is turning into less What a Josh Watch and Stump Josh. Can we name an under the radar noir film that Josh hasn't seen? And
aware, like, What a Josh Watch. That's what I think our opening part of the conversation was. It's like, what did you watch? No one cares. Yeah. You know, like, I know how cathartic it would feel to be like, okay, here we go.
Yeah.
I watched Moonrise, Man with the Gun, Station West, Guilty Bystander, Danger Signal, Vice Squad, Where the Sidewalk Ends, Naked City, Johnny Stoolpitch. You know, I could go and go, and that would feel so great. But I know that it would only make a joke out of it.
Where the Sidewalk Ends, that's Dana...
Andrews.
Dana Andrews. Yeah, I
love Otto Preminger.
He's great. Otto Preminger.
That movie's great. I love that movie.
The one I was going to run past you, because I hadn't thought about this until you mentioned Edward G. Robinson being the straight man to someone who's going crazy. Have you ever seen Nightmare? Nightmare. 1956.
No.
It's so Kevin McCarthy, you know, from Invasion of the Body Snatchers and all the Joe Dante.
Sure. Movies. And also in Drive a Crooked Road with Mickey Rooney.
Okay.
It's another noir I watched with Kevin McCarthy. He plays the bad guy. Go on. But, anyway.
So Kevin McCarthy plays a guy who has a dream, a very like weird, disturbing dream in which he murders someone. And he wakes up in the morning. And he's like, oh, that was fucking weird. And
dream. I murdered someone.
Yeah.
I had a dream.
And he wakes up.
I had a goddamn dream.
And then, it turns out that night there actually was a murder that happened like exactly the way he he dreamed it. So Edward G. Robinson is like his friend that he confides in, who like is like, I think you're crazy, or he's like, oh, maybe he did commit this murder. But basically, it's a cool idea for a movie. Kevin McCarthy playing the whole movie, trying to figure out. He's like the, you know, one of the tropes of noir is the sort of like everyman turned detective or whatever. He plumbs the depths. He's trying to solve whether or not he's a murderer. It's a cool idea for a movie. And they also shot a bunch of stuff like on location in New Orleans, which now is obviously much more common because of tax breaks and stuff. But this is 1956 Canal Street and stuff. You get some cool location stuff. Not a great movie, but at least I did stump you on that one. One I've seen that you have.
Yeah, that's a good one. And of course, it free associates me into. By the way, I'm not sure how comfortable I am. It's kind of fun, but I'm not sure how comfortable I am being like the stump king, because of course I'm gonna miss a few. I would love to find, like, you know. Although I will say, with Mariah, sometimes she'll tweet, "This one's new to me," and I'll be like, "I seen it," you know. Yeah. And then there'll be sometimes ones where it's obviously where I'm like, "I haven't seen that one," but I have watched a few that are like, did I do the murder recently? I watched one. In fact, I woke up and watched one this morning that was only an hour long, called Sudden Danger. And in fact, I watched two that were kind of similar, called, that were like blind person gets their eyes back noir. One was called Dead Man's Eyes with Lon Chaney Jr. And one was this one, Sudden Danger. Neither of them were particularly great, but I, you know, enjoyed watching them, even though they were crappy. And then I also tracked down, in the worst quality ever, this one that I really wanted to see called Blind Spot. And it's not about blind people, but it's called Blind Spot. And that one is about a blind guy. No, not, he's not blind. Sorry, I lost my train of thought. It's about a writer, a mystery writer, you know, like, who is a drunk. And he goes drunk into this publisher's office and he says, "Here's a great way to do a book or a movie or whatever. This is a plot." And he describes how a murder would happen in this book idea. And then they buy it from him. And then the publisher winds up dead. And then he's the number one suspect. And then he was so drunk, he starts to wonder, did I do it? But he's pretty sure he didn't.
That sounds pretty good.
But I found that that's where I'm at now. I'm going through IMDb and I'm being like, is this one on DVD or Blu-ray or streaming? Is this one available somewhere? And there's a few of them that I really want to see that I don't know where to find. If anyone knows where to find these movies, let me know. One is this one called Shakedown, starring Howard Duff, who was married to Ida Lupino. And that one is directed, the first film directed by actor turned director Joseph Pevney. And it's got a cool premise. I watched the first 5 minutes in terrible quality on YouTube, and then the rest is nowhere to be seen. I Googled it. It's very rare. It's about a ambitious photographer who wants to, you know, he basically wants to be like a Ouija, or he wants, it's like Nightcrawler or something like that, you know. Nightcrawler.
So this is not the 80s Shakedown with Peter Weller and Sam Elliott, which is
not that one, which is a fine film,
very fun movie.
Yeah, no, this is a different Shakedown. Maybe that Shakedown bought the rights to this Shakedown and says, we're shaking you down, you can't be at Shakedown no more. So I'm looking for Shakedown. If anyone knows where to find Shakedown, I would love to see Shakedown. Or if someone listens and wants to release Shakedown, get the rights. Indicator Blu-ray, you guys are great. Criterion, come on. Then another one, which I hear is not good, but I want to see because it's got such a great cast, called Slaughter on 10th Avenue. And that's got, it's got Matthau, it's got Duryea. And then there's another one called Man Crazy with Neville Brand. And it's from the director of Murder by Contract, guys. Murder by Contract, the same director. That's one that I watched on the Criterion Channel, and Martin Scorsese has been a longtime champion of it. And it's like this hitman. It's very funny, actually. It's a later one from the late mid-50s, and it stars this guy, Vince Edwards, and he's like alone in his room, and he's like real, he's real cocky, but he's doing lots of push-ups and like trying to keep fit. And you can see Martin Scorsese lifts these, like, a lot of this stuff for Taxi Driver, you know?
Oh, okay.
Anyway, you think anyone's following me?
Wait, that one's called Murder by Contract?
Murder by Contract. You followed me. So did whoever's listening at home. They followed me. Yeah. What's next? All right.
I wish that I had, I feel like with a couple of exceptions here and there, I feel like my knowledge of noir is pretty conventional, with a couple of, you
hit
know,
me with stuff. Them conventional ones.
Well,
I rewatched Sunset Boulevard recently too.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that. Great film.
But I mean, obviously, like Out of the Past, I think is amazing.
Watch that really... on my birthday.
Happy birthday.
That was in July.
Oh, okay. Well, I know, but I forgot to wish you a happy birthday. So it's belated. I apologize.
Thanks, Tyler. I'm 40.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
How's that feel?
Congratulations.
Thanks. You know what? It feels like the rest of the years were something out of the past.
Oh, and then there is one that it's like noir people know it, but called The Prowler.
Oh, yeah.
Which I've seen that, but I love that one.
I haven't rewatched that one. Is that Joseph Losey?
I don't remember now, actually, but I saw it a few years ago, and I remember being like, it's kind of what you're talking about. Like, there's like prestige noir, and then there's like the trashy noir. Yeah. And The Prowler is a little bit more trashy, at least in its execution. And like, there's the noir that makes you uncomfortable. You know, and as much as I adore Touch of Evil, and this, I guess this does not refute that, but like Touch of Evil makes you uncomfortable, or at least it does me, because, you know, Wells likes to clutter the frame and deals with characters who, you know, like what is it? Dennis Weaver's character, like the Nightman at the motel is wonderful.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
That's when like the method actors start kind of taking over.
Yeah.
You know, and it's interesting to see where it is by the end of. The end of the cycle, as they call it. I don't want to sound pretentious by using the terminology that all the critics and historians have dubbed, but that's what they call it. So let's just do it and not feel bad about it. Okay, guys.
The
end of that first cycle. Anyway, you were saying cluttered frame.
Yeah, and exactly. Cluttered frame. You got it. And then there's stuff like, I remember many years ago, there was like a DVD set. There have been multiple, and I don't remember who put it out, but it was like Film Noir Collection number one. There have been like six of them now. Uh-huh. And in it, there was like, you know, Murder My Sweet. And I think Asphalt Jungle was in there, but also The Setup Robert Ryan, which I really love. And I remember reading about it. And there are people who said like, well, this, you know, we have a hard time considering this noir from a story standpoint. But obviously from a tonal standpoint, from a stylistic standpoint, and even a little bit, I think from a narrative standpoint, I think it definitely fits. Which is one of the things that I find interesting is people, when people debate like what is and is not noir. I'm part of a film noir group on Facebook, and there'll be people who bring up, you know, this movie or that movie that I'm not sure I agree. Like, I put this actually out on our Patreon recently, which, by the way, everybody go and follow us on Patreon. We haven't said it in a while.
Yeah. Subscribe to our Patreon. If you
subscribe to the guys, Patreon, for crying out loud.
Thank you very much. For God's sake,
we're working hard for you here. Can you subscribe?
I like that guy. So I actually put it out on Patreon. Like, people say that Night of the Hunter is noir, and I don't think it is. Like I don't even consider it being very, I don't even think of it as being particularly like expressionistic. I think it's more just surreal. I don't know, but there are people that absolutely consider it noir.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's like, but then also, you know, it's like, does noir can be surreal, you know, but
sure.
I guess it's like, can noir be redemptive? I think that's where like The Setup comes in, you know, cause I mean, I've watched plenty of them where it's like, or does the good guy, I mean, it's weird. Cause I will say I've read the rules, quote rules, you know, like, but also, part of me is like, I don't really care that much. You know, I just sort of like the aesthetic and the feel and living in the world. I have three books that I've got that I've been like focusing on, about film noir. One of them is like a film noir encyclopedia by Orsini and Allen. They're like the two of the big writers. And another one's called Film Noir Reader. And it's like a collection of a bunch of the big essays. One's by Paul Schrader. One's the original French one by Bord and Chomaton, or however you say the name, that like dubbed the term film noir. And then there's this other one, which is a hilarious read. I highly recommend by Barry Gifford, who wrote Wild at Heart and Lost Highway, and a bunch of books, I guess, as well. And it's just called Out of the Past, but formerly called The Devil Thumbs Awry, but it's updated to being called Out of the Past. Mm. And he just kind of speaks, and he writes a lot of it like very thoughtfully, but in these very pulpy terms, you know, like he kind of just says, like, you know, Marie Windsor plays another big-breasted blonde who gets herself and, you know, gets hooked up with the wrong guy here. Or, you know, he talks about the Wild when he's like, Brando's never been fatter, you know, or he's like, Brando, baby Brando's filling out his tubby jeans, you know, yeah. And it's like, you know, he speaks like a, you know, an wow. asshole that you're talking with. And
to but think it's very, that there was a time that Brando had never been fatter than he was right. in the Wild.
Yeah.
Right. Or he's like, he's never fatter, but look at this fat boy filling out his jeans. But, you know, like he says stuff like that. And like, you know, it's mean and funny. And
like James Ellroy.
Yeah. It's very much like James Ellroy, you know, and like, but you know, like what's also funny about reading that, if you read the very proper and like collegiate film encyclopedia by, you know, James Orsini, the whole intro, like a big chunk of it is devoted to kind of like trying to intelligently refute Barry Gifford's book. I'm like, wow, he really got under the people's skin. He's like, you know, Gifford will say that it should be just reduced to Lawrence Tierney's sneer, but others might say that there's more to it than that. You know, it's just funny to see like book wars. Yeah, I just imagine Barry Gifford not giving a shit, you know.
That's like, I like, sometimes I like reading the trivia page on IMDb just for some movies trivia, because those are like open source or whatever, and so you'll see someone like two people clearly disagreeing, like,
yeah,
right,
the movie was shot in 21 days, the movie was shot in 17 days is what the next one down.
Something's also weird if you look up those videos, like it doesn't matter to me then because whatever this means doesn't mean anything versus what it would mean now. But a lot of them, they'll say, like, you look up an actor and someone will put, was a staunch Republican their entire life, or was a Democratic liberal their entire life, you know. And it's just funny that like someone chose to put that on there or whatever, the way, you know, it's, or even like Marie Windsor, if you know who that is, she's in The Killing, and she's also a famous like femme fatale, you know, she plays like, you know, just a mean dame, and you know, she's one of the best, but then we'll say was a staunch Republican her whole life, you know.
Who is your favorite femme fatale? And I will tell you my answer, cause you and I texted about her the other day, but Elizabeth Scott is my favorite.
Oh yeah. And I was saying, Pitfall, I was like,
and Too Late for Tears.
Yes, Too Late for Tears, I think, is her best. And, oh, I like Dead Reckoning also, but
have you seen Pitfall, though?
I own it, and I saw it a long time ago, and I've been waiting to rewatch it because I already watched it, but I have seen it.
Yeah.
And I remember that LAX is in it, or LACMA's in it.
I don't think it's top-tier noir, but I think she is, like, one of the great femmes fatale.
Yeah. Oh, wait, I wanted to rewind real quick before we get to them femmes, what Tyler was saying about like what constitutes noir. And I don't know, it is an interesting debated thing. I mean, like, because there's some movies that are seem like this seems so noir, but it has a happy ending, or, you know, right, they get some sort of like redemption at the end, you know. Is redemption part of it, or are, you know, I don't know. I forget. Are they allowed to get redemption?
I don't know.
Is the good guy allowed to win?
Yeah.
I think win is kind of a relative term. I mean, it could be argued that like at the end of The Maltese Falcon, like Sam Spade is not dead and didn't go to jail. He came out ahead of everybody else. But he also, like, this woman that he does seem to care for, he's sending to jail, if not to her death. So it's just like, okay, well, that's, and his partner's dead. And so like, he didn't come out unscathed, but it could be argued that he won.
Right.
Yeah. I think
with Mildred Pierce, you know, like the ending, sorry to spoil, should have seen Mildred Pierce by now. You know, it seems like, you know, Mildred Pierce, it's like for Joan Crawford, for Mildred, it's like basically the best case scenario that was going to come out of this situation happens, you know, the, the, we don't have to deal with this person anymore. They're going to get theirs. They're going to get theirs. And she gets to walk off, you know, basically into the sunset, but she still had to go through all that. And then look where she is now. And yeah, so I guess it's like bittersweetness. Bittersweetness is okay.
I feel like if there's, I don't think it's necessarily has to be about how it ends. I think the thing that really ties film noir together is you could be charitable and call it pessimism, or you could just call it a cynicism. Like I think
right.
that, like what Tyler was saying about trying to get to the bottom of a pandemic in the middle of a noir, it's a world where nobody trusts anybody else.
Yeah.
And within the
right.
the movie, for good reason, people aren't trustworthy right. and you should expect that someone's going to stab you in the back or lie to you. I think to me, that's what that,
right.
that cynicism is what ties it all together, be it a happy ending or a sad ending or color or black and white or whatever, all these, whether it's, you know, a lot of films noir, there's, you know, detective noir, but then a lot of it is about every man, yeah. the every man who's sort of dragged, who's tempted into by the femme fatale into the underbelly or whatever, right. which is like your double right. identity or pitfall, for example.
Right. You have a human moment of weakness, and then now yeah. your whole life is screwed because of it, or at least you're going to have a bad few days.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that, like in film noir, in the broadest possible sense, like innocence and certainly naivete, but just like. Innocence, optimism, or naivete is not going to serve you well as a character in this. In fact, other people will see that and immediately see you as a mark, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Whereas the more cynical you are, the less trusting you are, the more you keep to yourself, the better you're probably going to do. With, you know, the exception of somebody, of a character like Mike Hammer in, you know, Kiss Me Deadly, who doesn't really keep a lot of secrets. He's just so violent and brutal as a character right. that he's actually pretty straightforward in a lot of ways. But in that instance, like it's because he can afford to be because he's a monster.
Right. He's a big blowhard, you know?
Yeah.
That's an interesting one. Like I would say probably Kiss Me Deadly is one of my favorite movies, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. like we have not even talking film noir, you know, but, it's another one kind of like The Killing where it's like, I had seen Kiss Me Deadly and I always liked it. And then I rewatched it. And I'm like, oh yeah, I think this was one of my favorite movies. And, but by 1955, it almost seemed like that movie is reinventing the tropes. It's kind of turning them on its head. It's calling out that like this lead, this like blowhard, this like asshole, you know, who's like full of himself. And he is, he's not great. You know, he's not someone to like celebrate for being tough. You know, he's entertaining to watch, but he's like not, you know, he's like a schmuck.
Yeah, I think that's why, cause I haven't seen Kiss Me Deadly since I was maybe like 18 or 19. And I didn't really like it at the time. I think cause I was maybe not sophisticated enough a viewer to understand that it's okay for the movie to be about a guy who's a fascist asshole. It doesn't mean the movie's like endorsing that.
Right.
You know, and I had trouble watching it as a younger person. I probably like it a lot now.
You think that the movie's telling you to root for the guy or whatever.
Right.
You know, okay.
I have the same view of like Kiss Me Deadly that I do about The Wild Bunch, where it's these type of characters you've seen before, but they're extremely unpleasant and kind of dumb. And you're just like, oh, this is probably a lot closer to who these types of characters would be. This Mike Hammer type who's like, yeah, it's easy to romanticize like the tough guy that'll do whatever he has to do to get to the truth. But when you realize what he's willing to do, you realize like, oh yeah, I guess it does de-romanticize it quite a bit.
Yeah. It's interesting. I was watching a documentary about, maybe it's just on the DVD of Kiss Me Deadly and talking about how Mickey Spillane was like, he didn't like Robert Aldrich's spin on, you know, the material, you know, and he was like, well, that's not, he threw my book away, you know? But then at the end of his life, I think he admitted, he was like, you know, Ralph Meeker was the best Mike Hammer.
He was really good as Mike Hammer.
Yeah, he was. Ralph Meeker. Go on.
I was just gonna talk about Mickey Spillane in general. So you go ahead.
Oh, just I was going to talk about Ralph Meeker. I was like, he's so good. He's kind of one of those guys. I don't know what his like acting training is, but he's another one who's like, he's such a good actor. There's another one that he's in called Jeopardy, where he plays a bad guy with Barbara Stanwyck, where Barbara Stanwyck and her husband are on a vacation, you know, in the middle of nowhere, basically driving into Mexico. And her husband, played by Barry Sullivan, gets stuck with his leg under a rock at the, you know, at the tide line. And so like in a few hours, he's going to drown. And, you know, so she's got to go find help and drive the car off. And then she finds help, but she finds this, you know, escaped convict played by Ralph Meeker. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Stanwyck's always great, but it's interesting again to see like in this movie from like probably the early 50s, John Sturges directed it, to see this movie where Ralph Meeker is like, wow, you know, his first few lines, I think he says something like, if you do that, I'll kill you, you know, and just the way he delivers it, he's not putting anything on it, but you just believe him.
He's a very straightforward actor. And I feel like some of the actors from that time were refreshing in that regard. I think of Gary Cooper that way, in that, like, he doesn't need to layer on different things. He just plays everything pretty straight, and within that he can do a lot of different things, like whether it be like High Noon or you know, Mr. Deeds Goes to Town or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And so he can play different levels of like naivete or world weariness or whatever it is, but he plays it straight and just takes the character at face value and delivers a performance that some people might think is actually kind of flat, and I don't think so. I think there's a lot going on there. He just doesn't feel the need to just, you know, artificially add all these things so that you can see how much he's acting. And with my limited exposure to Ralph Meeker, that's kind of how I feel about him.
Yeah. It's harder to find a lot of good Ralph Meeker. You know, he didn't play that many leads, you know, strangely, not at least in that, during that period. I would have thought after Kiss Me Deadly, like there would be at least five or six movies where he's a lead. And I bought one called Code 2, and it's like just kind of a really crappy pro police movie or something.
Oh, you just made me think of another, because since the summer and the Black Lives Matter protests and defund the police movement and stuff, you've heard the term copaganda to talk about movies that glorify police. But you reminded me of a movie that is literal copaganda called City That Never Sleeps, that is actually like made with the endorsement and cooperation of the Chicago Police Department.
Uh-huh. Is that a Fritz Lang one?
I don't think so.
Is it like a big ensemble, or City That Never Sleeps? Or am I thinking of, there's another one that's like a 50s one, and I started watching, it's got a title like that, or like, maybe like called like While the City Sleeps or something like
okay.
that.
Yeah, these titles are like...
I know, there's also Cry Danger, Cry Vengeance, Cry Terror, I've seen them all.
Right.
Cry of the City.
There's He Walked by Night and They Live by Night, which I used to always get confused.
He Walked by Night, They Live by Night, They Drive by Night.
City That Never Sleeps is 1953, and it is directed by John H. Auer. It's kind of a corny movie, but it has a cool sort of central like hook, which is that a murder happens and the witness is one of those like city street like painted as a robot guys, you know, who's like pretending to be a robot, and the killer doesn't realize it's a real person and doesn't realize he's left a witness behind to his to his murder. That's kind of a fun idea, but that's one of those there are a number of movies from this era that are actually like made like with the cooperation of a certain law enforcement agency. So City That Never Sleeps is Chicago PD. Down Three Dark Streets is a FBI movie.
I watched that one and I was like, this movie, I don't remember anything about it, because it was, I like Broderick Crawford, but I was like, I remember sitting and thinking like, this one's a dull one.
Yeah.
You know? And, but I do remember that my good friend I told you about, Jay Adler, Stella's brother, shows up and steals the show.
There was just one more like that I mentioned, Trapped, where Lloyd Bridges plays a counterfeiter, which was made with the Treasury Department.
I watched that one too. There's a lot of counterfeiter ones. T-Men, that's another one. And I just watched one actually before we jumped on this Zoom call called Southside 1-1000. And that was like, I'd say the first three quarters were pretty dull. And then the last final act gets, you know, stylish and good, and it stars this guy we mentioned, Don DeFore, who's usually like the third or fourth lead He's the guy who knocks on the door in Too Late for Tears. Don DeFore, anyway, and he's also in Dark City with Charlton Heston. Anyway, he shows up, or he's the lead in Southside, and it's boring.
It does feel
It's about counterfeiter too.
I think speaking again to like what noir is and sort of the sensibility of it, like we're talking about it, like, is it cynical? Is it pessimistic? I certainly think it's suspicious of anybody that has power and anybody and any institution. So it does feel like any noir that is done with the cooperation of a huge authority, like the Treasury Department, is probably going to be a little bit compromised as from a genre standpoint.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always tough when not all of them. I mean, Team Men is pretty good, but it starts out kind of boring, you know, like with the whole here's a voiceover telling you, and that's what Detective so and so decided to go down that place. He jumped on a train, but then he saw that guy, and that guy wasn't so trustworthy, was he?
Yeah.
And it's like, shut up.
It's like they accidentally read the stage directions.
Yeah.
But now, admittedly, I do. I myself actually need to get going soon.
Sure.
We should probably wrap up anyway.
Let's wrap up. Did we accomplish a good? Did we break any new ground here?
Well, we've certainly thrown out a lot of titles.
I think we threw out a lot of titles that hopefully people. Obviously, Josh, you've become a noir expert. That's how I'm going to refer to you from now on. But I think people, you know, even our very well-traveled listenership might have some new
some noir to start with
out of this.
If anyone's got one, I'd love to hear them. I'd love to hear some recommendations.
One I always love to recommend, and I know you've seen it because you mentioned it the other day when we were texting about this, The Damned Don't Cry, which you can stream on the Criterion channel. Not only does it have...
Oh, yeah, I watched that.
Not only does it have the great... title, the greatest title ever, The Damned Don't Cry.
The Damned Don't Cry.
It's along
there's no
with,
crying in Damned.
Yeah, there's no crying in Damned Ball.
If we're going to do like a break things into subgenres of the subgenre, the idea of the noir where the femme fatale is the lead.
Right. You
know, Too Late for Tears, obviously, would qualify for that. But The Damned Don't Cry is essentially a movie about Joan Crawford sleeping her way to the top of an organized crime outfit. And it's and she does so out of the motivation of grief and after her child is struck and killed by a car 3 minutes into the movie. She decides to pick up and leave her husband and move to the city. And she becomes a department store model or something like that, and then becomes a gangster's mom,
right.
And then like sleeps her way up to the top. It's a badass movie.
Yeah, and she pissed. I remember I watched two in a row. I watched The Damned Don't Cry following Nora Prentice, which also had the actor Kent Smith, who plays the like accountant character in Damned Don't Cry. And I remember thinking like, there's an example like this actor's kind of boring, but he fits. He works really well in both those movies. Nora Prentice, that's another good one too. I'll say real quick, I'll give you that same list. I'll rattle off that same list of like lesser talked about ones that I really liked that I discovered. I don't know if you can remember them or not. I really liked The Burglar with Dan Duryea. It's a later one. And he just plays like a seasoned burglar who's so bitter. And I just think he's a great actor who's like somehow big and grounded at the same time and plays a lot of scumbags. But also he brings sympathetic quality to quite a few movies, even when he's playing like the biggest sleazebag of all. So that's really good, The Burglar. And then I really liked this one called Shield for Murder, which was a pretty nasty one starring Edmund O'Brien. I think it might be like one of his best performances. And then I really liked, and that's on Blu-ray, and you could probably watch it on Amazon Prime. You could watch that one. Sorry, it's on YouTube, really. And then I really liked the Reckless Moment with Joan Bennett, directed by Max Ophuls. Real stylish, cool the way it's directed, and you could find that one on Blu-ray. And then I really liked Fallen Angel, Otto Preminger. That's kind of like I don't know how to describe it, but it's good. And then I can't remember if there was anything else I recommend. There was a couple more I recommended, but that's probably good enough.
Yeah, I think people definitely have a good jumping off point for film noir here, including me. There's definitely several that sound really good, and I'm definitely in the mood now to engage in some.
please let me know what you watch and what you like.
Okay. Yeah. So,
cause I like talking about it. Mm-hmm.
You can follow us at battleshippretension.com. You can email us at david@battleshippretension.com or tyler@battleshippretension.com. You can follow me on Twitter at @davypretension or check out on the website. This week I reviewed Stardust and Happiest Season. And by the time you're hearing this, I will have reviewed Zappa and hopefully Lover's Rock. I'll hopefully have those up. You can read all those reviews at battleshippretension.com. You can follow Tyler on Twitter at @tylerpretension. Tyler, do you have anything to plug right now?
What I will say is, and I know I've talked about my documentary already, but my documentary Real Redemption, The Rise of Christian Cinema, which is available at Faith Life TV. It's a ways off, but I'm trying to make another one of these that is in some ways a little bit riskier. The more people view and rate this documentary, the more likely it is that this thing will be made. So please feel free to sign up for your trial subscription of Faith Life TV. Check out the documentary and feel free to give it a high rating, because that would actually help me quite a bit.
Tyler, I should have asked you what your opinion about real quick. Maybe you can say if you haven't seen it. What I Confess and The Wrong Man, because those are, I thought were both really good.
I've not seen either one.
Oh well, those were kind of fall in line with the, you know, what you're talking about. Those are Hitchcock noirs.
I was going to ask that, like if they're, cause like Hitchcock is associated with, you know, thrillers and stuff, but did he ever work with, in noir? But anyway, sorry, we can move on. Sorry.
No. Yeah. Next time. Anyway, I Confess. Those are they're very sterile. They're very like noir. He followed them with North by Northwest. Anyway, I'm zipping it. Sorry, well, guys.
No, actually don't zip it. Cause I want to ask, where do people find you? Where do you want them to find you?
Oh, nobody find me. I don't know. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Twitter. Tweeting about noir at Josh Fadum. Just to contact you guys if you guys need to contact me for any reason.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We'll be the.
We'll forward the it on. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So, but yeah, Josh, thanks so much for being here. This was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. Hope you guys are doing well and staying safe. And great to see you. And, talk to you guys. See, we're on Zoom. We're responsible.
Yes,
indeed.
Yeah,
I'm even wearing a mask.
That's true. Aren't we all?
Yeah.
Wow, getting philosophical there. Anyway,
well, thank everybody at home for listening.
We'll get you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
This program is a proud member of the Battleship Pretension Fleet.